Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. In this episode, Lewis Irons and Greg Patterson are joined by Edinburgh City manager James McDonough.
Greg, James, thanks very much for coming on the podcast. And James, the latest guest on, it's great to have you here. Thank you for taking some time out of, I know it's not technically the busiest spell for everybody, but there is still a lot to be doing at home, I'm sure. So thank you.
You're welcome. Looking forward to it.
And Greg, it's we've had some great guests on the podcast in the last few weeks. We're getting some good ones done here in, while in isolation. But in James, we've got an interesting guest on our hands to get right into things today.
Very much so. I think I was chatting to James recently. James does some work with us on our coach educates for us, which is great when he gets a chance to do so, you know, right up to our kind of level B license. And, you know, a recent chat with him, I was saying to him, you must be one of the very few people that have went from, you know, a level one introductory course right all the way through to UEFA Pro license and now managing in his own right. So that whole journey is, you know, there can't be many people. I don't think there are many stories out there that's, of someone that's done that. So fair play to James. And yeah, as you say, look forward to hearing what he's got to say.
Yeah, it's another type of story of on the coach education journey that we're going through in these podcasts, isn't it? Someone like James on here is going to be great insight, particularly for aspiring coaches on the start of the pathway all the way through. So, James, it's great to have you. First of all, let's address the current situation, of course. It's not easy, particularly being a current manager as well at Edinburgh City. It'll present a lot of challenges, I'm sure, but how are you coping?
Yeah, obviously, it's been really difficult. The whole thing for everybody on and off the pitch. For us, we had 9 games left, so we had a game in hand, obviously 13 points behind Cove. We've had a fantastic season. And we got pretty close to them at one point and they beat us, and that was quite a 6-pointer. So the 13 points behind, the game in hand, Cove to play. So we were never giving up on it, although, you know, if Cove, as they have been awarded the title, we congratulate them on that, and it's fully deserved. We would never have sour grapes about them getting awarded it early or anything like that, so fair play to them. But you never know with football, you know, 9 games to go, anything can happen. You win a couple of games and it's never over until it's arithmetically over, as they say. So we were looking forward to the end of the season. We felt we had a good chance in the playoffs. We were 12 clear in second place with a game in hand. And over the course of the season, I think loads of positives. We'd only lost 6 games, I think, all season, which was decent for where we were. And just looking forward to that, and then all of a sudden this has happened, and as everybody else is saying, I totally agree, it's unprecedented circumstances and a situation. You know, decisions have got to be made, and life's being at risk. That's the most important thing, people's health over football. So, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk in the last few weeks about the leagues and what's going to happen, so we just have to respect that and deal with it as it comes, and just hope that the club really can survive to start next season.
That's the priority, isn't it, James? Like, I know people will start speaking about, you know, the league has perhaps taken a lot of the headlines and the discussions around that, but ultimately it's not just health of people, but survival of clubs, businesses, and your club comes first and foremost for you and your staff and your players and everyone through the club.
Yeah, so we're obviously a really small club, apart from Cove, the newest. We're into the SPFL setup. We don't have our own ground and our own premises, so in some ways the club may be saving a wee bit in terms of outlaying that, but, you know, with no income at all, the club rely on that. They were actually due to have a fundraiser the weekend that this was kind of cancelled, which would have probably brought in about £10,000, which is massive for Edinburgh City. So they've lost in many ways, as other clubs have. They're all kind of in the same boat, so we just hopefully we'll get through it, and it might mean, you know, having to cut things back and start again for next season. But it's important that the club survives over anything else.
Yeah, that is. Greg, I mean, we're going to get right into things with James about progressing through the coaching pathway, but I don't think there's anything on the coaching pathway that prepares you for a worldwide pandemic, is there?
I don't think you can, but at the same time, I don't think you maybe want to either, given the severity of the situation. But, you know, all joking aside, there is some, you know, there's some great learning opportunities perhaps in it. To hear about James's journey, to wind the clock back 4 weeks ago to a time where, you know, how, you know, hearing from a head coach like James about how they might have planned and prepared for
essentially a time that they're not sure when the next game would be. You know, if you think back to that time when football was cancelled, we still thought we would plan for the following weekend, and then James probably thought he would plan for the following weekend again. So, you know, things have been constantly changing and moving. So that whole dynamic about how James dealt with his squad, dealt with his board, dealt with the fans, you know, that kind of scenario-based learning, I'm sure we could build on that and, you know, build a decent module in our UEFA B licence programme, for example.
Yeah. James, just a word on that, the kind of key learnings that you think you maybe can take from something like this. What have been the main things that have stood out for you so far?
I think probably knowing your players is one of the key things. I've been quite careful not to bother them too much, but I still want to know they're okay. More than knowing that they're doing their programmes or they're keeping fit, it's more a case of their health and their family. You know, we've had players in this period that have discovered that a sore knee has become a cruciate injury. So that's a real blow to him, and the same player also lost a member of his family to this COVID. So things like that are more important. The only person I think I've asked about doing programmes has been our strength and conditioning staff member, Andy Wilson. I've checked in with him, are the guys kind of doing it? But I'm not being too, you know, I think I trust the players. I think we've got a good bunch. I know there'll be still different levels of who will do what. I get that. But that's, I think, just knowing your players is the biggest thing. If you were going into this and not really knowing them, or knowing the situations they're in, for example, some have kids, some don't, some are married, some live alone, some are parents. So all these type of things. I've stayed in touch with them, but not pestered them, if that makes sense. Just tried to get a balance, and, you know, one or two have come back at different times and said, you know, what's happening and that sort of stuff. So I think that's the biggest thing. If you're going into this, if you didn't know your players and you're going into this, you'd be worried. Would you be giving them too much or too little to do? And we've had a good time with our players. As I say, we just fell short a wee bit and finishing second, but still very respectable, and we've had a good season at AFIO. I think most people would agree with that. And so you know them, you know that going into this they'll be out doing runs or whatever to keep themselves ticking over.
Yeah. Greg, one of the things that has recurred a bit on the recent podcast we've done since all this happened is that people are, not that they didn't before, but people are putting a lot of attention and paying a bit more attention to the fact that you are dealing with people at the end of the day, and James talks about that there, and that's the most important aspect at the moment. That must be, you know, kind of the same throughout the game around the world at the moment.
I think it is. It's people first, and unfortunately we're maybe becoming a bit immune to the numbers the government throw up every day about the number of deaths, but you know, behind is, you know, and I think somebody said that in government yesterday, behind every one of those numbers and statistics, there's unfortunately a family. And as James said there, you know, one of his players has unfortunately lost someone due to the virus. So, I mean, it's, you can't help but put people first, I don't think, you know, and checking in with people and making sure people are okay. But at the same time, you know, trying to just inch things along and get that little bit better. If you possibly can, and you know, people like James must be. Are they going to get back playing in June? Are they, you know, yes, the season's over, but what does that mean? Does James, yeah, does he enter a playoff period or whatever after that? I think that's still uncertain. But you know, and then how do you start planning for next season? What does next season look like? What does the start date look like? So there's an awful lot of unanswered questions still out there, isn't there?
There is. And our thoughts, James, go out to that player and his family at a tough time like this. It is hard, but our thoughts are with him. And we'll move away from the coronavirus topic at the minute. I know it's dominating a lot of things, but from an early age and onwards, what your kind of first experiences of football were from at an age where you're a young boy and upwards, how can you recall back then?
Yeah, well, it could be a long answer, to be honest. It goes way back, and even just recent lockdown, I think sometimes you forget your age. I think I still think I'm in my 20s trying to do these 5K runs, and I'm not. So the times are very good. But I think my journey goes right back to being at school, actually. Obviously, I was playing. People probably say, James McDonald, who's he? Did he play? Has he played the game? Oh, he's not played the game, but I actually did. I just never played it to a great level in terms of the Premier League or a lot of first team appearances or anything like that. But I played the game like everybody else. I loved the game. And when I was at school, I think I was in fifth year. I helped one of the school teachers take the first years at school. So probably, that would probably be about 94, so about 25, 26 years ago, maybe 94, 95. Took the school team, a maths teacher who was just like a typical teacher and just wanted the boys to be playing, so I managed to do a wee bit of training. I was fortunate at that time, I was playing for Strathbrook Juvenile in Roxburgh, and my coach was Joe Craig, who obviously played for Celtic and a cap for Scotland. And I would say Joe was the first person that really taught me football, that really taught me the game, the structure of the game. I think all my years before that was just going out and playing and expressing yourself and just, you know, training was just running or playing games. But when I played for Joe, it gave me that, I think that was my first sort of sign that I wanted to coach. Everything that he'd done, I was just like a sponge, you know, whether it be at the time I was a midfield player and he moved me back to a fullback, which I thought that was me on my way out, to be honest, but he wanted somebody to get on the ball, and it wasn't just about me learning. I was 16 at that time, and it wasn't just me about learning how to play as a fullback. I wanted to know what the strikers were doing. I wanted to know what the wide right was doing. If I'm playing here, where's he going? And we had a really good team. I think a lot of the boys, if it had been in the modern game, would have been the pro clubs. Obviously, it was before the youth initiative started. So I think Joe gave me that enthusiasm, and I started to take it into the school team.
Yeah. And then, Greg, it's interesting when we hear, like, a lot of the times the people we get in the podcast, it's obvious to talk about the documented parts of their career. But when you hear about the early stages and the love of the game from a young age, that's when you kind of get a bigger picture of things, isn't it?
It's almost like that kind of unofficial learning, isn't it? It's you know, there's that argument that as you go through school and maybe go to college, you've got, you know, up to what, 15, 20 years of education, so you kind of know what makes a good teacher. So it's a wee bit like that, you know, I think for James, and if he's started that young, you know, fifth year, 16, 17, mm-hmm. but you've already started to cut your teeth in coaching then a bit, then just builds on your experience all the time.
Yeah. And then from there, James, your progression into coaching, I know you were at Hibs in the academy there, weren't you? And how did that kind of come about?
Well, basically from the school team, I was still trying to play. I was still, I had trials down at Crewe Alexandra. I never worked out. Came back up the road. Was at Livingston for a wee bit, signed for Berwick Rangers. So I was still playing on a Saturday, playing reserves midweek. And then probably started to form quite strong opinions about how the game should be played. Having, you know, listened to Joe and the goalkeeper played the ball out for the back, and we built our attacks from defence, to being farmed at junior at 19 and just the ball getting booted up the park for the goalkeeper. And I thought, what am I doing here? What is this all about? And probably from the manager thinking he'd made a good young signing to me actually falling out of love with the game, because the ball just went over my head. I got around for throwing the ball inside, or I got around for trying to get off the goalkeeper. Just wanted to hit channels. And, you know, whilst I was totally in love with the game, playing twice a week, training the other days, couldn't get enough of it, I was actually thinking, what is this all about? So, and at that period as well, probably just failing to get a chance of going full time. So there was a period there where I kind of lost the love for it, to be honest. And I probably should never. I was at Aloe at the time, and I gave up playing only for a few months, but it was probably the worst thing I should have done. Maybe at the time, if somebody had taken me aside and said, look, be patient. They'd spent a lot of money on summer signings, thousands, to get themselves out of the league. And if somebody had maybe just took me aside and said, look, you're doing well, as captain reserves and things, and playing against Hibs and St Johnston, doing all right. Never the best player, but honest enough and working away. Maybe somebody had said, you know, you need to work on this, or you're going to be okay, just be patient. I would have maybe stuck at it, but I never had that. And I dropped out of the game for a few months, went back, played what is now the Lowland League, East of Scotland at the time, which was kind of just a level below the bottom league, and really enjoyed that and played with a lot of experienced guys, White Hill, Mickey Lawson as a manager, some real good players there. And still sort of pottered away a wee bit of the coaching during that time. And I got asked, the first team I got asked to take, actually, I think I was about 20. I got asked to go and take Tynecastle Boys Club. Typical boys club, were being run by a couple of parents. And down the bottom of the league, getting nines, tens, elevens against them every week, and thinking back, again, you don't know why you would never do that now, because you just couldn't. But it was great. I took over that team, started to cut my teeth, and actually the next year they finished mid-table, and two or three of them went and signed for Hibs. So it was a brilliant. One boy in particular, I remember Paul Lynch was one of the subs then. He was maybe under 12s, couldn't get a game for the worst team, and I thought he had real ability as a forward. And the following summer, Hibs took him in, and he stayed with Hibs for 4 or 5 years. So it was a strange sort of way to start. But Tynecastle, I was only actually there for about 15, 16 months, just over a season. And Hibs actually had come to watch, I think, a few of the boys. The youth initiative was starting, so we're talking about 2000 now. So I would be 22, just going into 2000. And they asked me if I'd like to come and get involved. So that was me sort of going into that part-time coaching and playing part-time at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, James has spoke there about taking over a boys' club that are shipping a lot of goals and struggling, Greg, and talking about, you know, would that be something many people would even consider doing? But I guess it's what we so often hear about on these podcasts is that step that turns into the next step, if you like, taking that plunge and making that step in the coaching career.
Making that step, and you don't know where that step will be. You know, nobody takes that step wanting to do badly, or, you know, everybody's got that ambition to do better, so, and kick on, which is why I think James's story is so fascinating, you know, and it takes that one step after another, and it's why I think, again, that, you know, this and James's story will resonate with so many listeners and so many people that are maybe just starting a B licence this year. And you know, I get a lot of emails, for example, oh, I can't do that assignment this time because I don't have a team. You know, but it maybe just does take that, as you say, that step to start taking a team that are maybe struggling a little bit to try and help them. You know, and as Russell Martin was talking about last week when he was on, you know, starting to put that down in writing and starting to, you know, detail what exactly you've done to try and help them, which it essentially helps your own career as well, as, you know, as you develop, and it helps you reflect on what you've done, what you've put in place to carry on, hopefully, up that pathway.
When you think back and you think players these days, they're different. Obviously, it's 20 years on. It's obviously going to be different if you speak to your dads and granddads. You're all back in our day. And it's one of the phrases as a youngster, you're like, oh, here we go again. But as you get older, it is a bit back in our day. And back then, you know, if you were dropped, you were dropped. You just got on it. You didn't go and chat the manager's door. You just had to do better. I mean, I remember Joe mentioned, signed us, and we had a right good team. And I remember at the start of the season, and he said, take me aside and say, look, I don't think you're going to play much this season. We hadn't even started. And I thought, how am I going to do this? And I played every game, every single game for the first friendly all the way. And I just made sure that he couldn't leave me out. I don't know if it was playing with my mind or a challenge, or maybe he just thought I was rubbish. I don't know, but I treated it, you know, I didn't go away and cry or speak to my mum and dad or fall out or phone an agent. I wanted to prove people. I thought I have to work harder, I have to get in the team, and I have to do better. So yeah, there was wee bits that you look back and you think, well, if only this. But I would look at myself, I never, you know, at 20, 23 year old going into Hibs, I never see myself as wanting to be a manager. I still wanted to play. I still wanted to be better. I mean, it's only now I think I've kind of been good enough. Back then I thought I was good enough. I seen other people getting a chance and I thought, what have I not got? But I think back and I think, what, you know, with my knowledge now, I think, well, I've never done that well or that well. Yeah. So I still wanted to play. And Greg's talking about people not having the time. I mean, then I was getting married. I got married when I was like 22, 23. I was playing two games a week. I was taking a boys' club. I was coaching. I was training. It was just, that's how my wife met me. I was just football 7 days a week. So it's always been like that. And you love the game, but I never gave up the hope of wanting to be a better player. The coaching was a bit of a side issue. Even when I went into Hibs, I was a Hibs fan, so it was an honour to go in and do it for nothing and run about halfway to DL and Dalkeith and wherever they wanted you to go and pick up ball bibs. And it was a great learning experience for me because I went in and worked with guys who at the time were heroes of mine. Keith Wright taking a team and Gordon Ray taking a team. Dave McMillan was a guy that got us in as a school teacher. So working with these guys was a great platform for me to take my knowledge. I wouldn't say I went in and took a Hibs team when I was 23. I'd done all the stuff, you know, I listened, I learned, I maybe took a warm-up or a wee shooting drill or a wee bit, you know, which people now would be offended to do if you asked them to do that. But for me, it was just learning. I was taking my coaching out of my games. I was taking my games out of my coaching. And as I said earlier, starting to form probably quite strong opinions about how the game should be played, which probably is a big part of the reason why I cut my playing career, albeit not spectacular, probably why I cut it short, because I just wasn't happy with the training and the games that I was involved in because the level wasn't great.
There's a point that James makes, Greg, that certainly I know you talk about when you're speaking to aspiring coaches or guys in the pathway, that commitment, that amount of time, that effort put in from an early stage, that's something that I'm sure coaches are fed up hearing, but when you actually hear it from someone who's put it into practice and has been successful from it, it paints that picture properly, doesn't it?
I'm kind of scribbling as James was talking again, and the word I've written down is apprenticeship, and it's almost as if you need to serve that apprenticeship that James describes of his time there in Hibs. And I just think James is right. I think a lot of coaches nowadays expect things to happen almost overnight for them. I think is it because of social media? Is it because of, you know, that kind of the millennials that they talk about, who expect things, that age of immediacy, expect things to happen pretty quickly for them? But unfortunately, football as an industry has never changed. You still need to, I'm saying unfortunately, maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a good trait of the game, that, you know, you still need to serve that time. I can't think of anybody that comes straight out of maybe getting a B licence and then getting a big job that they think they deserve, or, you know, that you have got to go through those kind of sequential steps of serving your time, serving your apprenticeship. And it's maybe only through things like podcasts you hear about the amount of time and effort these guys have put in. You know, and I'm not just talking about, James won't mind me saying, you know, even Premier League managers, for example, even down south, they've all got stories. You know, we heard from Marvin Bartley recently, didn't we, about Eddie Howe's, you know, journey. You know, they've all done it. They've all done it. But yeah, you're right. I don't think those aspiring coaches can get carried away too quickly with themselves and have to go through some of the stuff there that James is chatting about.
Yeah, because it's not just the commitment, James, as well. Your passion, your love for it. You said there that when you were offered that opportunity to go in at Hibs, being a supporter, being just a lover of football, I guess, you jumped at it. You had to put in a lot of graft, I'm sure, as well. But being a young guy, did that bring challenges with it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you had some people saying you should still be playing, and I was playing. I was trying to play. So don't get me wrong. I would still have chucked the coach in any time to get a chance back. But I think something kind of happened when I was at Hibs. It was actually the introduction of the Level 4. At the time, that was the Level 4 youth, I think it must have been. So at that time, the initiative was up and running, and they said, look, we're going to have this course 5 Sundays through DL. We want every youth coach to attend, and if you don't get this, you can't take a team sort of in youth initiative. So that was kind of just a number two, if you like. But John Park was in charge of the Hibs Academy at the time, and he sent everybody through. So I was delighted to be able to go and have the chance of doing it. So I think there was only 4 Hibs coaches that actually passed it first time, and I was one of them. So they kind of had to, kind of forced their hand to give me a team to take, to be honest. Maybe didn't fancy us, or maybe thought I was too young, but I did pass it. So at that point, it was kind of me getting the reins and the leadership to go and take a team. And I remember the first team I took, again, fortunate enough, managed to improve them and have some good results and kick them on a wee bit over that year. And that was probably the real turning point for me that gave me a belief that I thought, by the way, I can actually do this. I'm capable. People that I've maybe looked up to in the system before that, I'm maybe not behind them anymore, or maybe, you know, on a par with them or whatever. So that gave me a wee bit of belief, and it kind of changed for me at that point, because I thought, well, I could maybe do quite well at the coaching. And I wanted to go and do my youth licence, and obviously at the time, a youth licence was very hard to get. And through one thing or other, I was a wee bit discouraged to go and do that. I don't know if the guys didn't have the belief that I could pass it and they're maybe wasting their money. And that wee bit disappointed me. And again, it threw up another challenge, and I thought, well, no, I think I can do this. And it's funny because I was on a course through at Stirling, actually, and it was the East Fife manager at the time. He had said to me, come back and play, you know, we're looking for a left back, come back and play. And I thought, I didn't want to waste my coaching that I'd sort of got my teeth into. I was still playing the level below, and I said, look, I'm just going to leave it. I thought about it, and at that time, that was probably the time where I thought, that my playing days in terms of going into league football, I can give the coaching a real go here. I'm not going to get full time, so I can kick about part time and make a couple of quid. But at that time, actually, I just went for it. I went and done my youth licence off my own back, paid for it myself. Nice. I thought I can do this. And I ended up going to coach East Fife under 18s when I was doing my youth licence. I was a wee bit disappointed, I think. Maybe I felt a wee bit undervalued, but I can fully understand looking back now at Hibs, they think they must have thought, you're only, you know, in your mid-20s, how are you going to pass a youth licence? But I actually passed it as an East Fife coach at the time, which I felt gave it a wee bit more value, because I wasn't a name, I wasn't a big club, and it was tough, but I got through it.
James has spoke well about how the passing of that course aligned with some of the other decisions that he made at that time has given him that confidence. I don't want to use the word belief again. It's given him a confidence in himself to go and develop the path that he's chosen and the path, you know, the path that he wants to pursue. So, yeah, and it is so important. It's, you know, James displays a lot of humility in what he's saying, but, you know, some people have that belief, I think, you know, in bucket loads. And listening to what James has said, he's maybe not had it. It's maybe developed over a number of years for him. But at the same time, not having that belief is given that degree of humility, which is a good trait to have. So it's a fine kind of balancing line between the two, isn't it? Between belief and confidence, and, you know, to get to then suddenly align them with the qualifications and the experience that James managed to, you know, collate. Then, and good on him. And that's probably forged the, you know, as he said, he was only mid-20s at the time. So, you know, and it, looking back on the youth licence that time, I think it was known as the Beast. You know, everybody called it, oh, bloody hell, that's a beast of a course. And it was. I think it was Jimmy Sinclair at the time had developed that course. And, you know, it was a beast. And you know, fair play to him, as I say, for passing it back then and then being able to kick on further.
Yeah. I think that's, sorry, Liz, to jump in. I think that's exactly it, Greg. I remember, you know, the time it was Jim Sinclair, Tam McIntyre going through, and it was maybe 24 on the course. And I was a wee bit overawed actually going in, because there was pros doing the course, current pros maybe come to the end of their career, and I was like, oh, there's so and so and so and so, and I was just like just loving being amongst it. But also a wee bit worried and scared, you know. It was like 4 blocks in 4 days. I love travelling through, because I travelled through with Keith Wright, and as I say, Keith was hero in mine. Yeah, scoring that goal at Hampden in 91 for Hibs in the final. So to be sharing a car with him and getting his knowledge, I was kind of happy to be part of it, but a wee bit scared and a bit worried about the whole thing, and a bit nervous. And Edgar Scoob can doing your bits and pieces and like proper challenges. But I think at the end, it was probably when the letter came through the door to say it passed it, it was only like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 out of 24 that passed it. So those days it was really difficult, but I think that letter coming through the door at that point was probably a turning point for me to say, actually, I can do all right, maybe if I work hard at this.
It's amazing. You're jogging my memory as well of, you know, doing and through coach education. It'll probably, if, you know, people listening, Lewis, it will resonate again with them, because, you know, you get the butterflies in the stomach when you're going to those courses and what am I doing here? And then you see people and you think, gee whiz, I'm in the same pitch as this guy. But if you do knuckle down, you do put in the hard work and you're a good student, you know, a student of the game is what I mean by saying a good student. I don't mean academically or anything like that. I mean a student of the game, as James has been, then you know, you get places. You get places, and even if you don't pass, you know, it's not the end of the day, because you should have learned as a coach and you should have developed as a coach. You might not be deemed as competent yet, as James says, is when you get that piece of paper, but hopefully that day for you will come if you keep plugging away.
And of course, the journey through the courses continued. James, you made it all the way up to pro license, of course, and I guess we'll kind of come to the courses naturally through this, but I do want to touch on, obviously, Falkirk and the incredible achievements that you enjoyed at Falkirk, working alongside Peter Houston, who we know well here at the Scottish FA, of course, and you had some great times there. I'm sure that, you know, of course, you learnt a lot of the courses, but developed a lot in the game in those years.
Yeah, well, before that, Lewis, actually, I'd been at Hibs, and I actually went back. So I got my first, full-time job at Gretna, believe it or not. So I was working in an office in the finance industry, and even everything I'd done in the office, to be fair, my manager was brilliant, because he knew at that point I wanted to get into coaching. I wanted to be, that's where I wanted to work. So in terms of brilliant, I mean, I got a job as a team leader, again, before I was 30, managing people. I was seconded to the training department, so doing stand-up delivery, all the wee bits and bobs at the time. He knew that's where I wanted to go. And lo and behold, I kind of left Hibs to get the youth licence in 2006. I went to Gretna, left my work, went to Gretna. Was there about 2 or 3 months by the time I went, and it all collapsed. So that was a massive challenge to me, having given up as secure a job as you could to go and do that. But I was adamant at that point. I'd put so much into the football and the coaching, I didn't want to go back to the office. So I worked doing anything I could. I'd done bits and bobs for the SFA. I was, honestly, to think back, I was in nurseries, primaries, secondaries, disabled kids, boys, girls, anything to stay in the game. Courvoir, wee coaching camps, Easter camps, like party hats on. Like, when you think back how much you've actually done to get here, it's crazy to you would never do it again, I don't think, for me, but at the time, you just wanted to stay in the game. You wanted to, and it paid off. I left Gretna 2006, and Hibs, funnily enough, needed a youth licence holder. So I was only actually away for Hibs 16 months. I went back in April 2007, and I worked with Alistair Stevenson, who's now the head of youth at St Johnstone.
Yeah.
And there was a massive influence on me at that time in Hibs. I helped him. He was in charge of the sort of under-19s at the time. And luckily for me as well, they just had a good group coming through. You had David Witherspoons, your Callum Booths, and that team won the league and the Scottish Cup. So it was great for me to work with those players, Sean Welsh, still playing, and work with Alistair. So that was a massive thing for me. And from 2007, that was me full-time at Hibs for 7 years. So that period, seven different managers in 7 years. Again, really lucky, the people that I've worked with. When you think back, the managers, John Collins, Mitsu, Yogi, Colin Calderwood, Fenlon, Butcher, and then Stubbs before I left to go to Falkirk. And not just the managers, but all the assistant managers that were there at the time, you know, your Brian Rice, Gareth Evans, guys like that. Loads of them, loads of people that you would get, you know, loads of knowledge and experience from, was brilliant. And then obviously, back to your question, going to Falkirk in 2014 with Peter was a great move.
Yeah, I guess before we kind of get further into the Falkirk stuff, that some of the names that you've touched on there is fascinating to hear. And I guess you'll have so many stories that you could recall working at Hibs in those years. But was there any moment in particular, James, through that when you were working with these guys that something just sparked in you, or you learnt something that you thought, where's that come from, or was it too regular an occurrence to recall at one point?
Well, I was probably at the start, because I was working with Alistair, so my job when I first went in was actually to be in charge of the under 12s all the way down. It was the first part, because we'd kind of losing players to Hearts. They had got a sort of stranglehold at that age group, and they were getting the best players in at the city, they were going there, so we had to try and stop that happening. I was to oversee that, take the under-17s, and also assist Alistair under-19s. So really, until Alistair moved up to the first team, so the first few managers in terms of the first team stuff, although I was in there full time, I just kind of kept myself. I didn't just knew my place again. I was probably a bit overawed, to be honest. And from the first day going in at Easter Road before the training centre was actually open, just delighted to get a bit of kit with the Hibs badge on it. You know, I was happy with that. Never mind the wages that were coming in to pay the bills, but so many good, like when I went in, obviously John Collins and Tommy Craig. Again, I just distanced myself a wee bit because I wasn't even the in charge of the second team, so I was kind of 17s and 19s assistant. So I didn't put my nose in. I actually remember being on the B licence with John Hughes, and he was talking about something, and he's, how did you not know that? You were there, how did you not know that? And I didn't ask questions, I just kept myself. I tried not to know too much because he'd been a Hibs fan, family, and friends would all be like, what's happening there? Are we signing him? And he had a thought there, and I would just say, I don't know, because I didn't want to pry, and I didn't want anything to cost me my job or that. So there was a lot I probably didn't know. But just being around these people from John Collins, Mix, who came in with Donald Park, his assistant, John Hughes and Brian Rice, some great times, and Colin Calderwood and Derek Adams you brought in. And Pat Fenlon, Liam O'Brien, so Terry Butcher, Morris Malpass, it's good for the CV. Plenty of names.
Certainly is. One of the other things as well, Greg, that, yeah, we're talking about these names, but I think a point that James made at the start of this is the game can be full of a sort of a reputation, oh, he's not played the game or this, and even though James has played the game, it is a big step to be around big personalities in football. We all know how many big personalities there are, but that speaks even more volumes of James' success as well, to go into these environments and succeed.
Yeah, and it's you know, does it go back to your upbringing as well? James mentioned it earlier on in the episode that he was chatting about, you know, that kind of old school mentality, and certainly I think James and I are of similar ages, you know, and you were kind of told to not ask questions, and that's the kind of way you were brought up, whereas now people tend to ask more questions, and maybe that's a good thing, because I kind of look back on my career and regret a wee bit that I wasn't as maybe outspoken or as asked questions. But, you know, we were, I think James and I, as I say, similar ages, were maybe brought up similarly to, you know, kind of don't speak unless you're spoken to type scenario, that, you know, you maybe just did, and you kind of were a wee bit more old-fashioned. You know, you just did what you were told. You didn't question things. You were as effective as you possibly could be in doing your job, and that was it. And that was it. You know, you wouldn't go and, as James said earlier, you wouldn't go and pry. But, you know, there's a lot of qualities. There's a lot of qualities in there as well that, you know, that you develop. And as you say, working with all those different names and what you can glean from all those different people has, you know, it's great. And people talk about that sometimes. It's the best coaching strategy, isn't it, to steal things from other people or borrow things and adapt them slightly, and you know, that's, James has that opportunity and bucket loads with all the people that he's worked with to take all those experiences, skills, attributes that they've had and kind of take the best things from them, hopefully to put together into his own model.
Yeah, so then from going from that, James, where you are, you know, earlier stages of your career around these people, probably not speaking as much like you touched on, to becoming an assistant manager at Falkirk and being the one to be delivering a lot of that, I'm sure. How was the transition for you going into Falkirk and working particularly with Peter Houston?
Well, personally, it was a very difficult decision to make. Obviously, saying I was a Hibs fan and they'd just been relegated. I'd actually just moved my family closer to the training ground to that was in the November. And then I left within under a year. So I moved my family away from all the rest of the kids' schools, from their grandparents, everything, to make the commitment to the club, just to be closer to the training ground so I could do more and obviously get home a wee bit quicker and a better blend of family and working life. And that was really thrown up in the air when I got a phone call sort of the end of July. Peter's assistant had left to go to Norwich, and I never knew Peter at all. The only time I'd ever kind of half met him was on that youth licence. He didn't remember me. I think he said if he remembered me, he'd fail me anyway. So he clearly he clearly never remembered me, but I think I was a wee bit fortunate because people say, how could you be his assistant? You never met him. But he had taken Alan Mabry from Hibs and obviously got on well with Alan, and Alan in his last part of Hibs had helped me with the reserve team, the youth team, whatever it was at that time, development team. So Alan had signed for Falkirk and Tom Tyler had signed there. So I think these guys, luckily for me, must have put in a good word. And I met Peter and he asked me, and he needed a quick decision. I think that was what was difficult because the season was just about to start with Hibs. And obviously Alan Stubbs had come in and I was looking forward to working with, again, a different somebody different. And there was just a wee thing that kind of happened at Hibs at that time. Obviously, them going down, I just felt there was a bit of change going on, which is always difficult to adapt to. But I'd been through enough of it, you know, with managers, playing styles, what they like, what they don't like, what time are we starting training, who's having lunch, are you allowed down that corridor, are you not? So I'd been through plenty of that. So to get players through actually at that time was very difficult. But then I was looking forward to the next one, and when Peter asked me to do that, I just felt a wee bit Hibs that, you know, it was time for a change. And I spoke to Peter and I thought, go for it. And it was, to be fair, it was a real wrench having to leave Hibs, but a great decision because I had 3 years working with him. And I think you could say taking the chance, but I think the fit was perfect at the time because Peter, I remember at the start, he says he just needed somebody to take a wee bit of training and he would, you know, do this and that and do the management stuff. And I think once he'd seen me on the training pitch, he gave me a wee bit more to do and probably sort of let me lead a lot of what was going on pitch. But I owe a lot to Peter Houston. He was a great, again, names and whatever. I was fortunate at the time because Alex Smith was about the ground as well. But Peter gave me a lot of, maybe a lot of rope to hang myself as well. You know, if the training was rubbish, he would soon tell you. He would slaughter you. But equally, he would praise you in front of the players. He would praise, you know, remind the players how lucky they are with what they were getting in terms of the training. So it was great for me at that time. He gave me the chance to go and deliver a lot on the pitch. And obviously the 3 years that we had with him is invaluable for me going into management.
Yeah, success was one thing. We barely even got into there with the results and the runs in the cup and stuff like that. But one thing that James has touched on there, Greg, that I wanted to touch on with yourself is, we've not really spoken about this often on the podcast, but relationships in the game, it's quite a small industry, isn't it? And I guess if you have a good personality, good relationships with people as well, that can't really be underestimated in the importance of this game.
It's, you don't often hear, do you, that, you know, James's story again is quite interesting in that, you know, he never knew Peter Houston. You don't often hear that. I think the only other thing I remember chatting to Michael Beale, and Michael Beale didn't know Stephen Gerrard when Stephen Gerrard asked him to come from Liverpool. You know, although they were both working at Liverpool, he never knew Stephen at all. You know, and he got asked, which is maybe a bit similar to James's story in that, you know, it was a bit of a surprise coming from the head coach or the manager that he never necessarily had a relationship with. But you're right, Lewis, it goes to, it's testament to the relationships you've built up with other people. And then when somebody's asking around, you know, bloody hell, I need an assistant. The assistant's just left. I need another assistant. Where can I get an assistant from? And Hoostie's asking those questions. Then James's name's obviously popped up in conversation, and that's led to Peter then making the phone call and offering James a job. So you're right. It's so important to develop good relationships with good people throughout. And in a sense, I maybe don't like the phrase too much, but, you know, it's keeping your nose clean as well and not upsetting people, but not at the same time, not just doing things to be a yes man, because, you know, you've got to challenge things and standards. But all the time, just making sure you're right, that you're cultivating and developing relationships with others.
Yeah, and then, of course, James, we're probably could go into so much more depth in this podcast. I think me and Greg have said that a few times when we're doing these, but I want to just kind of go on now to where you are, of course, Edinburgh City. That was 2017 that you moved there, I believe. And
yeah, well, it wasn't really something I planned, obviously. We were at Falkirk and when we'll go into the success that we had, because we need another bit to talk about that. But we obviously finished when we lost our jobs. We weren't doing well enough at that time. And you've got to face the fact we started the season poorly. I think we only lost four games, to be honest, and we lost to Sac, having finished second to Hibs the season before and second to Rangers the season before that. So I thought it was a wee bit harsh in terms of that, but Falkirk were desperate to get up, had great times there with Peter and at the club. So that was the time when I was on my pro licence, actually. And I think at that time, I probably did. Again, it's just growing in confidence, you know, all these times at Hibs, and you're always looking up to people. That's why you don't ask the questions. But I think when you start to get a wee bit more belief in yourself, you do ask the question, or you get a wee bit comfortable. So, you know, by the time we finished at Falkirk, I'll be honest, I think I was a wee bit disappointed in not getting the chance to even take the team for a couple of games, to just be told that you're out the door. And I know Peter kind of spoke up for us and said to give him an opportunity. And I know the players were keen for that. So that was disappointing. Really gotten, to be honest, to lose your job. It's horrific. And I think I was only out 3 weeks, and it was just really that time being out and probably being on the pro licence. It was the 3 weeks that reminded me back of being at Gretna. Like a horrible, horrible time. Saturdays were horrible. And lo and behold, we had actually played Edinburgh City in a pre-season friendly, and I remember speaking to the chairman and I said that I wanted to be a manager one day. And I'm glad I said it, because it stuck in his mind. His manager left. Yeah. And I think that the manager resigned on the Saturday, and a few people had said to me on the Sunday, "You're going to apply for this job?" And I thought, I don't know, I'll have a think about it. But by the Monday, I had a phone call from Jim Jeffries and Jim Brown, who spoke to Peter Houston and said, "Look, we'd like to speak to you about the job." So again, just timing. What was it planned? No, not really. But I thought at the time, I thought, well, the challenge was there. They were sort of struggling at the start of the season. Couldn't they win a game? Couldn't they score a goal? And I thought, well, all we need to do is keep them in the league. That was the challenge that lay ahead. And I thought, well, how hard can that be? And looking back again, I was probably crazy to take it, because it was probably one of the biggest achievements that I've had, to keep them in the league, because the challenge was extremely difficult. But we've done it.
Yeah, and of course, we touched at the start of this how you guys were in the middle of a tremendous campaign, and while you're not taking anything away from COVID, there's so many positives, particularly from when you think about where it was when you went into where you guys are now, that you must be very proud of ultimately, James.
Yeah, I think before I'd went in, the previous manager had done a great job in getting them up to that level. And it was just trying to maybe take it to the next level, but get them surviving first. So we've done that, and you know, we worked with the players that we had there. But once we started to get to a window and bring in some of your own players and your own members of staff, you know, my assistant Colin Jack, who's a great enthusiast for the game, he's especially during lockdown constantly studying the game and learning, and another A licence holder, youth licence holder, so I brought him with us. So lucky in that sense, you get people in that you can kind of trust, and they're on the same wavelength as you. And yeah, we've done all right. We'd love to be doing better, but we're just trying to take it step by step.
Yeah, and Greg, we can, I guess, touch on the courses in a little bit more depth as well. Obviously, we touched on the fact that James is an incredible candidate for a podcast, in the sense that he's made those progressions all the way through the pathway. From your side of things, seeing that and now obviously hearing from James himself, it is quite a story.
It is quite a story, and you're saying from my end of things, seeing that, you've got to remember, I think, Lewis, you know, it's a long story, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. You know, that's not happened overnight, and you know, I don't want to give James his age away then, but you know, he's talking about doing level fours when he was, what, 23. So you're talking 20 years. You know, okay, he's been an Edinburgh City manager for, what, 3 years now, I think, James. So, you know, you're talking about a 17-year journey there, which takes a long time. So I've only really known James for the last 4 years when I met him on the pro licence course. So, yeah, it's that one I touched on earlier again. It's you know, it's not an immediate overnight success. It is, you know, plugging away, gaining experience, building relationships. You know, James has given another good story there about, you know, at the end of the day, didn't need to apply for Edinburgh City job because, you know, he's developed a relationship, albeit just a brief conversation with the chairman. So, yeah, a long story that we're trying to cram in here to just under an hour, I think.
I know. Well, and another thing I want to touch on while we do still have time is of course the fact, James, that yes, you're managing Edinburgh City, you're coaching players, but you're contributing on the B licence as well. And that side of things, do you enjoy delivering to aspiring coaches? Do you look at them and see a younger you out there, and does that inspire you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously we spoke about Jim Sinclair and Tam McIntyre running the courses back in the day, and then obviously Jim Fleeton and Donald Park, big saying it, and now it's down to Greg and his band of guys. So it's great to try and take a bit of everybody and help people move forward. It's funny that you just reminded me of a story. When I got the Edinburgh City job, I remember Craig Beattie he stayed as my assistant, and I remember him speaking to someone saying, "Is because I didn't have this glory playing career, you know, what type is he? Is he a laptop manager?" And that's absolutely opposite to me. I love being on the training pitch. You know, a laptop I can use and I'm okay with it, but I'm at my best, I think, on the training pitch with the players. I love delivering the training sessions, and being part-time is probably tying into the courses. The worst thing about being part-time is you only see the players for 3 hours a week and then your game, so it's not enough. And I miss being on the pitch all the time, but the fill-ins for me are the coach education, and it gives me a different line. So I do a bit of work with Sean McCauley, who's a development officer down in East Lothian with the primary seven kids. So that's good in that sense, but also tying in level ones, level twos, helping Sean deliver those. And then right up to the B licence with Greg. In May, I'm obviously going to miss that this year. I've enjoyed it the last couple of years and really keen to continue that and help. It's just one of those things that, again, I never thought this is what I want to be doing by this time. And people always talk about, like Greg spoke there about social media and 5-year plans and all the rest of it, and you should have a plan, but I'll probably be one of these guys that have always had ambitions without a plan. I'd love to be doing this, I'd love to be doing that, and you know, if they come along or the right time, you go for it. And the coach Ed has been great. We've had, you know, your local guys through to your international courses, guys all the way from India, and you know, I got an email the other day from one looking for opinions on a game because he's obviously, you know, boarding the lockdown as well. So building a lot of contacts and just trying to help people, I think that's probably one of the biggest things is, you know, people will look at you and say, "Oh, you're taking credit for this, you're taking credit for that." And that's one thing that I don't think I'm that type of person. You know, when I left Hibs, I sent a message to 3 or 4 that got on the Scotland 21 squad, and I remember somebody on social media slaughtering me for it, saying, "You take credit for that." All I was doing was wishing them good luck, you know, because it's people they'd work with. So social media can be great in terms of, you know, the content and that's out there, but I kind of stay away from it most of it now because it's more about just preferring getting on the pitch, and people will know whether you've helped them or not, I think, if you've been on the pitch, either as players or as coaches.
That's a whole other side of things that James has actually touched on a little bit there, Greg, as well, is that side of management and that side of coaching, where you are open to, you know, the wider public ultimately being critical and having an opinion on the job that you're doing, and that's not always easy.
No, it's not. And I've got, you know, I remember a story similarly when I was working in Ireland, and Paul Clement was on the pro licence, and we were in Ireland, and then of course Paul goes and wins the Champions League with Real Madrid, and of course Paul put something up, I think, and I retweeted it, and of course half a dozen people then jump on the, "I can't believe you're taking credit for Real Madrid." I'm not taking credit for Real Madrid winning the Champions League, for God's sake. I'm just, as James said, I'm just congratulating Paul that he's, you know, that he's made that level of the game and he's working at that level. So you're right. I think as you said earlier, it's about helping people and being proud that you've not played a part, but you've maybe just helped. You've built a relationship or you've helped them a little tiny bit along their way. You know, I don't hide the fact that I do think coach education only plays 20% of the part of a coach's journey. I think there was a recent study came up with that figure. You know, it's only about 20%. The other 80% is that hard graft and endeavour and experience, and as James says, trying things on the pitch themselves and getting experience in the club environment. You know, coach education is only the the theoretical side, if you like, and trying to do as much scenario-based learning as we touched on again earlier that we possibly can. You know, it's really up to the individual thereafter. We can only, I suppose, hopefully point them in the right direction. So no, you're 100% right, Lewis, but it is about developing those relationships and hopefully helping people on their way.
Yeah. James, we've tried our best to delve through your coaching pathway from the start to where we are now. We've not done it justice in the sense that we could keep going on and we could go deeper into it, I'm sure. But I guess the kind of next thing, and if we kind of bring it to a close now, is the next steps. I know it's hard to say just now with the shutdown at the moment, and I know you'll be just thinking and itching to get back to football. But of course, with what's about Edinburgh City and moving forward, what are your hopes and aspirations?
Well, we'd love to take the club into League One. That's been our ambition for the last couple of seasons. Some people say it's a bit pie in the sky stuff for a small club like that, but I don't see that. I think it's possible. We've built a good team. We're also building the club round about it, the board, new investor and owner. So it's kind of going in the right direction. So whether it's next year or in a few years' time, we want to get them up the leagues. For me personally, I want to be back full time. I miss it. Everybody's missing football. Well, that feels like me every day of the week. I'm not training, to be honest. I just miss being on the training pitch every day, and I try and make my time up round about Edinburgh City with football things. So I want to be back full time, ideally with Edinburgh City. If not, then as I say, it'd be great to work in maybe another country one day or whatever, or coach education. I'm quite open to where my future lies, but hopefully it's in football and back on the pitch every day.
And I know I speak for myself and Greg when I wish you all the very best with that, James. And just quickly, Greg, before we bring it to a close, it's impossible to pinpoint one part of this podcast, but to just kind of summarise some of the points there, it's been a pleasure really to listen to, hasn't it?
It has, and it's another, as you said right at the start, Lewis, it's another take on a coaching journey, you know, that somebody that's, again, James doesn't mind us saying, it's somebody that's not necessarily high profile, but has managed to find their own way. And that's important. He's managed to find his own way in the game. And as you say, all the very best to him. And we do hope he kicks on. And just a funny story I remember of James, before we do go, he talks about missing the game. I'll remind him of that the next time he sends me a text when he's on a bus to Elgin. And says, I feel as if I've been on this bus for 3 days. That's I'm sure it doesn't feel like a part-time job when he's got to do that. In fact, did you not have to go to Elgin maybe one midweek and then were you down in Wales in the Challenge Cup the following Saturday or something like that as well?
It was two Saturdays in a row. I think they pretty much covered the length of Britain almost in a journey. But that's it. I think most people, you could go and put a training session on tomorrow for players and it could be the worst training session on the worst pitch with burst balls, most disorganised, numbers wrong, and the players would love it, because I think this lockdown has made everybody, given them a wee reminder, I think that, you know, a bus trip to Elgin, a game away to Albion Rovers or whatever it may be, is all of a sudden now really attractive, whereas before it was like, oh, do we need to do that? Do we need to go there? But we're looking forward to this day being over and hopefully getting back to proper football.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.